Okay, we'll go ahead and call our Board of Health meeting to order. And apparently Dr. Kluge will be a little bit late, so we're going to go ahead and start without him this morning, or this afternoon. The first item on our agenda is the consent agenda. And all these items listed on the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion on these items unless request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. So I would need a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
So did you have personnel actions under the consent?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to back up just one step under personnel actions. We talked about this at the last meeting about how it should be the authority of this board to approve personnel actions as opposed to the Board of Supervisors. So what we did is our scanner quit, Tim, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and that was a project that we needed limited funding. We wanted to get that going. So Margaret knew somebody, had somebody in mind, I think, and between her and the auditor, they got a replacement, what, within a week maybe after he quit? And then the other both concern Kathy Basilinski about the first one is her longevity increase, and the third one is our long-debated pay increase. And we got all of our I's dotted, our T's crossed, went through the procedure that is in place, and Margaret did a nice job, presented her case to the HR director. And so we've got a 3% salary increase on here for Kathy Basilinski. So we're done with salary discussions for a while.
Good. A while.
Okay.
I just noticed on the call to order the time says 106 instead of 206.
Pick right up on those two.
Okay, we'll let that one slide. Next item on our agenda is a public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. We'll move to agency reports. Homeward, Eileen Mullen. And Eileen's got this, and then she's also got, it's further down under 4.3, consideration of success story for the performance major. When Eileen's done with her agency report, she's going to talk a little bit about this report for the performance major. This is something that the board has to vote on, and since we meet every other month, we're up against the deadline. So Margaret is going to, Eileen is going to talk about it and let us know what's going to be in the report. What this board can decide to do if they would like to is approve the concept and also approve Eileen filing that report. And once the report is actually completed, that report itself, the physical report, will be on our consent agenda for our next meeting. So we're gonna kind of combine two items.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. I think first I'll just bring forward the budget component. We're halfway. This report takes us for the first half of the budget year, and we are moving right on track. We've already spent over 50% on everything, and you'll see on the local Board of Health where we're doing disease follow-up and surveillance and so forth. We've used 94% of those dollars. And so we're not going to have any trouble spending our money. There's nothing I need to point out as far as any concerns that we've had at this point in time, unless there's any questions. And then I passed out also the disease surveillance, or Terry's report. And let's see, for disease surveillance, there was a neurovirus outbreak at the Ames Public Library. You probably were aware of that, and Terry did a nice job working with them, and so we were glad it was just located at the public library and not further extended. Influenza, you've probably heard that those cases are decreasing. No new cases in TB control. No visits with our lead program this this last month. And in emergency preparedness, we've done some training with the volunteers. We did an ice storm tabletop with the home health and hospice staff. And we continue to inventory our point of distribution supplies. We're really re-looking at that. We, you know, a while back we received a lot of dollars to use for emergency preparedness. And the things that we wanted to use our money on, something that might have wheels or some generators, we weren't allowed to use the money, so we bought a lot of supplies. That they get outdated, and we're trying to exchange them with hospitals. Hospitals don't use the same supplies, so I think we're trying to give them away to physicians who go on mission trips and so forth. So we're really trying to scale down that. And we keep it out at ISU, the storage house out there at ISU.
Oh, that's where you keep them?
The supplies, yes.
I've gotten a request for looking for people to get, and I never got a response of what you actually had.
Oh, okay. I'll follow up. It's types of syringes and
needles. You said
needles,
a lot of, and
syringes, and there might be some sort of wound supplies, but probably mostly needles and syringes. You want me to have them call you again?
Or just if they can just email me, just
okay.
The supplies that they have, so I'll keep my eyes open.
Okay,
and stuff.
We'll do that. Just out of responsibility for how the state wants us to continue to move, looking at being coalitions with other counties, we made a effort again to have conversations, and truly we just met with Boone, and it's just we're comfortable staying in the coalition in our own counties at this point in time.
And that's kind of what everybody's doing, isn't it?
It is. And there is another emphasis from the state to try to relook at it. And I just got an email that the monies that's been allotted to the state of Iowa for these funds has decreased considerably. So I don't know what we'll get in our share once it's divvied out this next time. The county health rankings. The county health rankings has, for 2014 has come out. During this time, there is a webinar to talk more about the county health rankings, so I don't have a lot of details to tell you. Have you seen any of the outcomes for the county health rankings? I do have the report, which you will get a more final one eventually here. Show and tell refresher here. We have the county health rankings. It's under health outcomes, health factors, and under health outcomes, it's determined by healthy behaviors in clinical care, and health factors are socioeconomical and physical environment. And this year, health outcomes for Story County out of 99 counties, we are number 8. Out of 99, which is very good. Last time we were number 7. So quality of life, we're at 12. And, gosh, I didn't write down what we were last time. Health factors, we are number 1.
What's health factors?
Health factors include education, employment, income, family and social support, community safety, and physical environment, which is environmental quality and built environment. Number 1. Last year we were number 2. And health behaviors.
Oh, no.
I know what. I want to know who
there's
we have
nowhere to go.
I want to know who we have to beat. I wonder who's number 1 for all these other measures.
Yes, and we will get that, and I'll send them out to you when we have that. And for the health behaviors, we're number 2 now, and we were number 3. So health behaviors, again, is tobacco use, diet and exercise, alcohol use and sexual activity, access to care and quality of care.
So we're what on that?
Number 2. Wait, number 3. I'm sorry, number 3.
I think we're the lowest, though, percentage of population that smokes.
We probably are.
I heard that the other day, and then somebody brought it up again last night, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not. We're doing. Yes.
Right. Right. College students, yeah. 32.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, that was health behaviors. Clinical care, I apologize. We're number 6. Versus number 4 last time. Social economic factors, in general, were number 2. We were number 4 last time. And physical environment, we're number 63, and we were 72 last time. So we've really done very well. So when I get the details, I'll send this out and to you guys.
And who votes or who determines this?
This is through the name just left me. The University of Wisconsin, the population. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, couldn't get that out. So it's the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation does this throughout nationally, through Iowa, all the counties in Iowa. And so it's done through the University of Wisconsin. I actually have some information. I'll leave you on that, and I will also email that out as I get more of that.
And I have a question on the Lyme and Rocky Mountain spotted fever cases. Were those acquired in Iowa, or were they people from other parts of the country? It's just early for ticks.
Which one is this? What question?
The Lyme and the Rocky Mountain spotted fever cases. Do you know if they had traveled elsewhere, or?
I can't answer the detail of that.
Oh.
I will be happy to email that to you as well. So you're wondering where, where they got that?
Yeah. It's been winter and cold here, so I was curious if they had just been somewhere else, or
I don't know that, but I can get
you
that.
You can release that. That's fine too. I was just more.
Terry would be able. I just don't know.
Okay.
And she can give you that, so I'll email you that as well.
So that's not an early.
I hope it's not an early sign. That's all I have for that report.
Okay.
So I go into the...
Yes, the consideration of the success story for the performance major. So you'll just kind of have to walk us through this.
Okay. each year, our local public health service contract requires us to have some kind of performance measure that if we meet that, have... met that criteria, then we get some extra funding money, and I think this year it's $1,000. So this year they asked specifically that we tell a story on how the Board of Health has helped to improve the health of the communities that we serve. And actually, we had a lot of stories that we could choose from, and I'm just keeping them tucked under for next year in case we have to tell more stories. This year, what I chose, if you feel that this is worthy of it, is actually a report I heard here from YSS on the work that they're doing with to reduce tobacco and substance abuse. So I think I'm calling it something about reducing substance abuse in Story County. And YSS has sent me a lot of the work and the reports that they've done, and I was going to put in that we had 4 goals that we wanted to meet. The first one was to reduce the incidence of high-risk drinking behavior in Story County residents, reduce tobacco use among the residents, and the fourth one is to reduce abuse of stimulants, sedatives, and other illicit substances in Story County. And I can pull that back to our community health needs assessment, show that there was an opportunity for improvement in that area. It was a high risk for us. And then, gosh, we can just use some of the rankings that I just mentioned to show how we've already done some improvement. But YSS has done a dynamite job as far as outlining education that they've provided, outlining how they've collaborated with many organizations throughout the county, worked with the schools, and so I have a great detail, a bit of detail about each one of the activities under education, collaboration, and a few other areas. as well as then some outcomes that they have had already and put stats for. So if the board would approve of that, that's the story I was going to tell.
Okay. So, yeah, I think the action that we would need to take today would be to approve having Eileen submit that report. And then if it's approved and it goes through, then what will happen is that the physical report itself will be on our agenda for next meeting. It'll just be under the consent, and we can just approve that, the actual physical report itself. But as of now, the report's not done. But the due date is?
The end of this month.
End of this month, so we won't meet again until June. So that's kind of why we're doing it this way. So what I would need would be if someone would want to make a motion to approve the Homer to submit that report. So we've got a motion. Is there a second?
Yes, I'd like to second that.
A motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It looks like next we have Laura Bell from Youth and Shelter Services. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Well, thank you for letting me come and speak with you today. Unfortunately, Jay, Mark, and Denise and Denton aren't able to be here today, so I'm kind of here in their replacement, so I apologize.
Glad to have you.
Well, thank you very much. What I just passed out to you was our booklet from our last week's Teen Maze event. And Teen Maze is an experiential learning event for 7th grade students from Green, Boone, and Story counties. So in total, last week, we saw 964 7th grade students throughout the entire week and 87 adults. So we partner with local professionals and other volunteers to put on this event. And we have a total of 12 different booths that cover different topics. And these are all related back to the topics that the students are learning in their schools. So we try to build upon what they're learning and provide it in more of an experiential, possibly real-life setting. So one of our tracks is a relationship track, and they learn about bullying, prevention, and safety, and having healthy relationships. Another track is our employment track, which is called the jobs track. And so they learn about budgeting and how to get that first job and just kind of those daily living skills. And then the health and wellness track is the track that I'm involved with. There we have our party room where these students walk into a party scene and then they have to work with the officers and the prevention specialists to observe what's going on in the party and then how they can get themselves out. So for a real life situation, how could they do that, stay safe with their peers, but still keep themselves safe? And then they also work with the officers that work with our volunteer students who volunteer to do sobriety testing so that they can understand later on in our juvenile court the legal consequences of some of those choices, should that they make those choices. A lot of the times when we work with students, they get the understanding that these choices don't really impact them now. So we work with local lawyers, and we've had a couple of actual magistrates from Des Moines and Greene County that have come out and partnered with us as well to talk with the students about the legal consequences of their choices and how it follows them throughout. And then we have our tobacco room, where we partner with Story County Medical Clinic staff the entire week. So I'm eternally grateful for those individuals. But they work with us, with our students, to talk about the health consequences of tobacco use. And then we also have software that we can take a picture of a student and age it from the age that they are now to 72 to show what they would look like as a lifelong smoker. It is. And then we also have lungs in there that are provided to us by DMU that are cadaver lungs. So from a smoker and a non-smoker who passed. And then we also added this year our nutrition room. So our nutrition room talks about guided eating experience, so the students really kind of have to take time to learn what it's like to eat, savoring their food, getting an understanding of what it's like to be full. But we also threw in the message of family meals and how important it is to eat a meal with family and how that relates to reduction of substance abuse rates and other kinds of high-risk behaviors. So those are some of the new things that we did this year. As far as tobacco, I'm the person who is under the community partnership grant for IDCH, addressing tobacco use in Story County. So I'm still working with local businesses and apartment complex owners and managers to work on smoke-free and tobacco and or nicotine-free policies for those areas. And then we're also just kind of working on getting the education out there to local communities. So I provide one-time presentations to local civic groups or other interested groups that are interested in education about tobacco use or related tobacco topics.
How many years does this make for?
This is our fourth year. And, you know, we're always looking for people to come out and visit and see the maze. So, if next year you're interested, by all means, feel free to come out, and we would happily guide you through and give you a tour.
Where do you hold it at?
We hold it at the Boone County Fairgrounds, in their community building. That was kind of the largest, more equidistant place that we could find. It was actually feasible for everybody to get there.
Do you advertise it through the schools, or I guess this is the first I've ever heard of it? So
oh, my goodness. We advertise it with the schools, so we work with the schools to make sure that, we're providing that partnership and meeting their curriculum needs, because we want to make sure that this is an effective use of their school time as well. We also do press releases. We've been on the news in the past as well, but we're working on expanding. No. You are just fine. We're working on getting it onto our website as well, and we also have a YouTube video of our team name experience last year. So if you go onto YouTube and you search for Teen Maze Youth and Shelter Services, there's probably about a 12 or so minute video on there.
Great. That's great.
Good. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. For the second time today, Margaret James of Environmental Health. That's okay. It's always better the second time around. So,
yeah, so apologies to Lewis and Leanne. And
I'll pay attention this time.
From Board of Health, Board of Supervisors to Board of Health. So, we're good. Okay.
Yeah, I can see it.
Let's see. So, sorry, Paul. I know this is hard to go through this twice, but okay. So septic numbers. We haven't been doing. We've been mostly catching up on in office stuff. Haven't been doing much field work. Soil is still frozen for doing probing, so I haven't done any of those for months. Been great. We've had a lot of calls about frozen systems, and then compounding that are calls to the pumpers. They were getting like 6 calls a day. During that really cold spell, to come out and do something to people's systems that were backing up into the cellar because of the frozen conditions. So in answer to that, we posted something on our website to talk about what folks could do, although if you're frozen, it was generally too late. And the way to handle that lots of times is to just go ahead in and keep pumping the system and then really use water conservation, shower at the gym if you could, things like that. It's been bad. And so next fall, we'll advise homeowners to let the grass grow longer over the laterals, use snow fencing, go ahead and mulch the system and the tank. Do not install it too late in the year. And then like the neighbors to our north Minnesota, a lot of them use the septic heaters now. And you can add that even if you don't have electricity out to it. A lot of folks just use those outdoor extension cords like you were doing with your Christmas lights and stuff, yeah.
So is it more the laterals that freeze up, or is it the inside?
It's mostly been like the box and the line from the house to the tank, and there's a lot of different reasons, but it's mostly been not the laterals, but before that, yeah.
Now, like my system, my tanks are buried, so everything, even the basement bathroom, is gravity feed, so my tanks are 8 feet in the ground, but then it pumps up to the leach field. So that's where my concern would be between the tank and the field, or would be the field itself.
I would say between the pump and when if you're not getting that drain back properly, right up there,
yeah,
is where it's going to freeze.
I was fortunate; I didn't have any problems, and the location of my leach field that had, I mean, they had snow cover on it all year because it was protected down the wind. So it's, and I think that makes a huge difference if you have snow cover. Yeah.
That was a problem back in, I think, December, maybe even late November. We had that really early freeze without snow. So haven't had any of those calls for a few weeks, so that's been nice. We have 10 outstanding notice of violations, mostly septic, waiting for the weather to get better to deal with those. Binding agreements, a lot of time of transfers are being, inspections are being postponed. Complaints, frozen systems, use of the lead house. Paul mentioned that they're working in there, and that's maybe why we're seeing generators and things like that, not necessarily someone living there. Tullamore Glen Creek, we showed slushy water on top of frozen ice in that really cold spell, and I did some BOD testing up and downstream from that, and nothing significant. You know, it's a little higher below. So we're just going to keep an eye on that. We do not know what's causing that weird slushy stuff, you know, but it doesn't seem like a septic system, and there's, you know, no commercial inlets there, so I don't know what's going on there. So stay tuned for that. And then indoor smoking, this is our first complaint we've ever received on this. There are folks smoking in a bar in Maxwell, so they called here to complain, and we forwarded that to IDPH, and they send down a letter telling the establishment what they need to do to comply. And then if they get another letter, another complaint, then they send out another letter and then alert the local officials and the local law enforcement. And then also the liquor license folks get copied on that letter too. And this bar apparently, it's two separate buildings and they sell tobacco in the back part where people were allowed to smoke. And because their tobacco sales are a percentage large enough, they can allow smoking there too. And they also have to have air handling that keeps the smoke in that far room. So they got it all figured out, I guess. So I don't think they're in violation. So this one didn't violate. And on our website, we put instructions on how to submit a complaint to IDPH if they're so inclined. First one ever, though. Pretty good. Well, numbers, only 4 permits so far this year, 2 water, 2 geothermal, $15,000 remaining in our grant fund, and unlike our Homeward, we will have trouble spending that down. I do believe that $15,000, we got to, you know, we're running out of wells to plug. Part of it is because we're not out on these septic inspections for these, farms that are selling. So that's just part of the deal. Lead program, 8 open cases, visited 2 clients with mid-range levels. This is not a required inspection, so it doesn't go under the grant program. Doing lead dust testing submitted to the lab just to give the parents an idea of how their kid is picking up these, you know, levels that are in the teens, but not above that 15 to 20 range, you know. So it helps them know how to make their home lead safe for their kids. And then I did get the EBL recertification, and it's good for 3 years. Our pools, tanning, tattoo programs. Matt closed down 1 hotel pool and spa for violations. It was the water chemistry and then also cracks in the spa facility itself. And he closed them down, and then later that evening I was doing carpooling, and I swung by and looked in the window and saw that they opened it after Matt had closed it without correcting anything. So closed them down again, and then and then Matt went there the next day and made sure they were closed. So they got everything squared away, and then we put them on the frequent flyer program. We will visit them more often, and they have to.
So where is this hotel?
It's the name.
I know.
Okay, can I? I don't know.
Can you say the name?
I don't know if I can or not. Who knows?
It would be
public record.
Public record. Comfort Inn, right on off of Dayton there, sort of. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So you think maybe that there wasn't the follow-up that probably there should have been under the previous contract?
Yes. Yeah, because, you know, and Matt, you know, he was just like, kind of watching. He asked the guy to demonstrate how he tests the water. And so the guy had to look for the kit, and you're supposed to be doing this, you know, throughout the day. He had to find the kit, and the kit was just like crusted shut. And so you know that he hasn't been doing what he's supposed to do.
There's a new daddy in town.
There's a new daddy in town,
that's
yeah.
That's right.
We're the government. We're here to help you. Yeah. Yes. And then tattoo, 5 facilities are in the county. They're all in Ames. And 7, Kathy did those inspections. 7 inspections are completed, and they're all in compliance. Everybody's doing what they need to do on those. And then May 1st, the 3 of us have to go for the annual IDPH training for those programs. Trainings and meetings. I went to the Groundwater Association EDL certification class, and then the LEPC group. Kathy also went to the groundwater. Matt's been running the EAC. And Kristen went to Leadership Nevada. She will graduate soon. And then also attended the Grant Writing USA class, and she highly recommends that. The Groundwater Association, I can't think of his name, Bill Simpkins, Dr. Simpkins with ISU, he gave a great talk about aquifers and Ames and how they are tracing, they're using viruses to trace the flow of groundwater. And those viruses aren't from people necessarily, but they are in hogs. And so it's probably coming down the Skunk River from maybe some of our facilities, but probably more so the counties to the north, coming down the river and getting into the aquifer. So thank goodness we have people doing research like that, learning more and more. It's really, really interesting stuff. Hickory Grove Lake Watershed, I emailed everybody, said that we did get the WERB grant. Most of that money goes to stream bank stabilization, but some does affect our small program for the septic system. So $17,000 from WERB, and then the Story County Water and Conservation District offered me $10,000 for that program, and then another $18,000 from Board of Health and Board of Supervisors. And so we're offering up to one half on the septic systems, those 9 that need to be replaced. Next step is to have a meeting with those folks and just try to get them all on board. That'll be the tricky part, but we're getting closer. Yeah, we're getting closer. So about 4 of those folks have come in and at least talked about it. You know, haven't really signed on the dotted line yet, but they're getting closer. I need to stay on that. Let's see. I did not have any involvement in this, but this is the smoke cloud from the Stover fire that happened. That was yesterday, right, Paul? Yesterday. And on 670th and 190th Street, and a bunch, apparently there are way more fire departments. There are like 9 or 11, Keith said, attended. DuPont only mentioned those few. But so all a lot of fire departments, and Marshall County came over to help put out that fire. And they also did a control burn on the adjacent property to help it keep from spreading. 5,200 bales were lost, and then kudos to the emergency planning folks. You know, so air pollution, fire danger, traffic danger, a lot of health things here.
This is a big 1,200 pound bale.
Where was that at exactly?
Northeast in Nevada, so if you go up F-27, east of Nevada, here, the blacktop that goes up towards McCallsburg. You go up to E-29, and you go a couple miles east. But yeah, that's
bales, 5,200
bales. But they say when this plant is up and running at full capacity, it'll consume about 1,000 bales a day.
So but I mean, it's a lot of, yeah. How much was lost at the Colo fire?
I don't know. They had a fire almost exactly a year ago. I think it was the end of May. And they think this one was caused by a lightning strike, and they think that the one by Colo was caused by a lightning strike. They probably lost that many or more from Colo.
You wouldn't think lightning would strike that,
but yeah, but they stick up. I mean, if you drive through the countryside and see them, they're up. I mean, they're stacked up higher than a house. So, yeah, I'd be buying some lightning rods.
As Paul was saying, Tim found a new job, so we had Andy James as our new scanner person. We are enduring new phones. We're still kind of learning on those. I finish the performance evaluations for Matt and Kathy, and then Leanne and I will review Kristen for IART, which is the interagency review. Like a lot of the departments in the county get together and talk about projects that are going on in the county. We reviewed 9 this month. 2 that kind of stick out, Prairie Moon, they're going from making and serving wine. They also want to start brewing beer, which is a fun project, but because they don't grow what they need for their beer on the land, then there's a whole bunch of different rules, and they have to apply through DNR for their wastewater treatment, not through us. So the DNR's recommendation was hire an engineer, just, you know, cut to the chase. And then Black's Farm, that is the farm directly south of Ames, kind of on University Avenue. If you just kept going, that would be, you'd run into Black's Farm there. And they are planning on granddaddies and church, and I think they withdrew the daycare, camping, all sorts of activities on that site. The problem being that their facilities will be portable toilets and hand washing and not on-site treatment. Not on-site treatment. So we'll have to keep a real close eye on them so it doesn't turn into a public health issue out there. And
what's the cutoff? When can you not do public?
Well, you know, mass gathering is 1,000 people. 1,000?
Day?
Yeah, there's certain hours and proximity and that. But 1,000, like Visha would be a mass gathering, for example. So
temporary. That's just a temporary situation,
right,
though.
Right.
So if they're going to do this year long and do it,
well, if they don't have running water, I can't really make them.
They don't have what?
They don't have running water inside their church or their granddaddy thing. I really don't think I can make them do anything.
They've got to have water somewhere there on that property.
They have a well. They have a well, but they're going to use, you know, just like you would see at the fair, all those, you know, rows and rows of porta potties and hand washing stations.
But that's temporary versus something they're going to do all year long.
Yeah. You're singing to the choir here, Mark.
I don't think they can do that if it's going to be an ongoing situation.
Okay.
I guess you have to check into a state, but I don't think they can do that if it's going to be a long term thing. I think so.
Interesting.
All right. Well, I'll look into that. Do you have any leads for me? Long term?
It'd just be a code issue is what it'd be.
Oh, like a plumbing code? Or
yeah, plumbing. Probably on the plumbing code. I talked to the state, I guess.
We'll see how their plans go. Sometime, you know, we'll just see how kind of the plans go. You know, they might scale things down considerably, possibly.
It's kind of a work in progress. Working through some issues with planning and development and getting their permits in place. So they were scheduled to host an outdoor event. Well, not necessarily outdoor, but an event last weekend. And I think initially they had them scheduled for every weekend in April, and I think they were planning on through the summer to have live music out there every weekend. So yeah, so we're not quite done with all that yet. The Board of Adjustment's not quite done with that yet. So
they go to the Planning and Zoning Commission on Monday, the 7th. Last weekend's thing go okay?
They didn't have it.
Oh, they didn't have it.
No. No, they've agreed not to have anything.
Oh, I thought they were still going to do something or other. Some little shindig.
Okay. It's like the Farm Progress Show. You know, that's like a 3-day deal and it's done.
Yeah.
There you can do that. You know, temporary toilets and stuff or something like that. But like if it's going to be long term, every Sunday or a couple times during the week, that's a whole different deal.
Well, if you can find anything that I could cite to tell them that they cannot do that, send it my way. That'd be appreciated. And then on closing, we did the Family Farm Expo thing again. It's just in Nevada here. A lot of farmers show up for this, and a lot of kids from future farmers. And probably not worth our time. I don't think we'll pursue it again next year.
Second time you've been, isn't it? You know, last year?
Our second year, yeah. Yeah, get the same, pretty much the same people, and yeah. So, and there's my April Fool's thing. So,
one other thing, Margaret, I think, I don't know, have you heard our Trevor Corps out in West Ames? I think it's going to go bye bye.
Is that right?
So,
is Ames going to annex it?
I heard someone purchased that property, and they're going to do something with that. I heard they were in the process of their eviction notices to all those people. So I just, that's a hearsay thing, but that's what I heard, that was, something's going to happen out there. So then that means they would extend the sewer and water out there.
Yep.
That gets rid of
now
that.
Now that the headache is there.
Yeah, get rid of that headache is there.
You know, that gets rid of a lot of the complaints, but it is a nice place for low-income housing folks to go. I mean, because it's affordable there.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that the city would keep it a trailer park, but provide services, decent services, but it doesn't look like that'll happen.
So, you know, it may fall through, too, the whole deal, but.
Oh, okay. Thanks. That's good information. Anybody have any questions or?
Oh. Okay, next we have under additional items, consideration of septic system disclosure policy. And I think everybody should have a copy of that in front of them. And we've also, in the background, have our planning and development director, Leanne Harder, because this will affect her department also. So
this is something that's not new to you. We've discussed it, I think, a couple of times already. And so I just kind of put it into writing and submitted it to Leanne for her review and also to Jessica Legal. And I think both parties are okay with it. The thing that I added that I totally overlooked before is I will also include it, people who are getting a second septic system for their property, for their, like, their pole building or whatever. Lots of times they want that, but they don't want me to look at their house septic system at all. So now they'll also have to tell me what's there if they want to, go through the permit process for their new building too, you know. And I'm just talking about what is on that property, not, all the properties that they own, but just on that piece of land, so the house and that. And then also for well permits, and I think if anybody will be hurt the most, it'll be the well permits, because lots of times drillers will come in and they'll want to do their geothermal wells, and usually we can just whip off a permit and do a review, site review, in a day or two, and because they're always, wanting it to get it in. Now they're going to have to stop and locate the septic system, which we would generally try to figure out beforehand, and we would figure out the general but not the condition of it for setbacks for wells. But now we want to know the condition of that too, so that it would have to be replaced if it's shot. Okay. So I wrote this up. It's long and it's hard to, it's boring. And I talked about all the different applications that would be affected by this. And Leanne would have to bring the planning and development application changes before the Board of Supervisors and get their approval. And then for us, we've never really done that. I could write them up and have you approve them, or I could just get a blanket approval from you today to include this in our septic systems and well construction applications. And so basically what it'll be, Kristen did up a draft application, and this box, septic system disclosure, is what we would be adding to all of Leanne's and my applications. So you fit into, anyone coming in would fit into one of those five classifications. Permit and diagram on file with Environmental Health Department, and we'll just, you know, look that up for them and check it off, and they're good to go. Hook to public city, to public sewer, we would call the city and confirm that. Number three, does not generate wastewater. That maybe black might be an example of that. Inspection report attached, and that would, that inspection report would be to the tune of around $400. It's the same as the time of transfer. They would go, it wouldn't be a county inspector. It would be a private one that's certified by the state. And just like with the time of transfer, they get a report with a diagram, and then we would file that and have that information for any future build zoning permits, et cetera. Or you could just admit that you have an incomplete septic system and sign the binding agreement, and we would come up with a decent time for them, you know, enough time for them to get it in. I didn't want to just specify 3 months or whatever, because it has to be construction season considerations on that. But I think, you know, aside from the pushback from people applying, I think staff-wise, it's pretty doable. It's pretty doable. Did you want to comment on it at all, Leanne? Or?
Sure.
I think of all of the only one I think we'll still wrestle with a little bit is the home business permits and how that's operationalized. As Mark and I discussed, there's instances where that's a hypothetical situation. Someone wants to start a home business in their house. Their house is built in 1890. It's never been through any zoning permit review. It's never had a well or stuff, no trans, nothing that, it's basically fallen through the cracks. And we don't know whether or not there's a septic system there. In that case, the overall benefit of the general health, safety, and welfare that both health department and planning and development regulations are geared towards is benefited by having this in place, where there is a process to identify whether or not there is a septic system. But then we still, then I start to wonder, are we going, at what point is it going too far, too? But that's maybe there's some that we, on a trial basis, the home business permits, and just find that that might be too arduous. But that's what I think it's an opportunity, though, to get to the overall goals and mission of protecting health, safety, and general welfare. It's a good solution, the policy as written. And as Margaret said, we'll work accordingly based on your decision. Planning and development will take the necessary changes to our applications. Those are adopted annually by the Board of Supervisors by resolution. So we'll have to provide those amendments to the board and take them. And then we can fully implement.
So typically, what would a home business in Surrey County? I mean, is there like one that's more common than the rest, or... Can you give me a good example?
No, I don't. We have an entire gamut.
Okay.
Let's say lawn care business. I don't know.
We have a listing of all the home businesses online. That if this is online, I'll go ahead and show you what we have currently.
Dogtown is another one.
So I think the way this is drafted, it would not apply to the annual renewal. Home businesses are subject to annual renewal by Story County. By a department, it would be the new home businesses that would come in. And,
you know, and like Blacks is a good example of home business, right? I mean, and then not knowing what they have for septic systems is really helpful to know what they have. And right now, they don't have to show me what they have. It makes it really difficult to know. Well, and then in Nevada, the gym one,
the arena. Well, that's a zoning permit, though.
That's a zoning permit? Okay.
Well, they do have it one business,
like it's connected,
then it
was
it...
But look at that. Going to our own webpage is a security risk.
Dog grooming, kenneling,
gunsmith,
car repair,
contractors in general, plumbers,
insulators, Like Iowa Foam is on there.
But what it does, it puts more, well, when they have a business like that at their home, where they put a business, that it puts more use on their systems.
They have
now you have more people coming there, showing up, and then that puts more of a load on their septic systems.
When they don't always have employees on site, and that's one of the questions that planning and development does ask.
But a lot of them do have more.
Well, we only allow one more employee then I think it's only one additional employee to the family if it's a home business. And conditional use permit is a whole different gamut. We're just talking home businesses. I think it's either one, maximum two additional employees that are not members of the family residing on the property. It's very limited.
They have to reside there. Oh, not just work, come there during the day to work.
That's a home business permit, right? The idea with the home business permit is, first and foremost, it's a single-family dwelling. The business portion is ancillary to that primary use.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I kind of struggle with a couple of these on here. I mean, Mark, you're a plumber. If you were a young man wanting to start a plumbing business and you were going to run it out of your home and you came here to apply for the permit, and I say, well, yeah, show us your test septic system. Are we overreaching what we're supposed to be doing, or is it too big brother? I mean, a lot of those, if you can only have one additional employee, and so there's not a lot of, I could see the beauty, the hair salon thing, because you could have two or three people there at one time.
Waiting to get the chemicals and that. But
right, but yeah. just in the case of somebody that runs a business out of their home and would only have one other additional employee there, I mean, that's not going to put the strain on their.
A lot of times it starts there, but then it ends up with four or five later, shortly down the road.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't be the same permit, though.
Well, right, it would be a conditional. Well, yeah, it's hard to enforce.
Could you separate these home health permits, the type that need septic systems looked at? Are those that will only have one extra employee but will not have direct dealings with the public on the site? I mean, because someone like the scenario that you said, you could run your plumbing business from your home, but I never visit my contractor's home. I call him up, he comes out to my house and he takes care of it. But if I'm a hairdresser, I'm going to have people in the home.
What's the difference?
A way to make that stipulation. Because that's what you're talking about, right?
Exactly. I mean, I know a lot of guys that are, construction, they run a construction business out of their house. They don't have any additional employees there. If they do, they need them at the job site. But we're asking this guy to show us his septic system simply so he can get a permit to run a business out of his home.
Why would someone want a business permit out of their home? Is there a benefit to that? I mean, do you have to have that? Like if I wanted to, run type of shop out of my house?
It's a kind of a multi-tiered answer. One, there's a growing number of entrepreneurs that an emergence of small business in the United States, and the cost for startup is enormous. And when you have the opportunity to use an existing single-family dwelling for which you're already paying mortgage, rent, whatever that will be, that in turn can be a tax write-off too. So that offers an opportunity. Honestly, in my case, if I had the opportunity to stay at home, raise my kids, and work through my home as home, there's certain lifestyle. It's a certain lifestyle that is appropriate for certain families or individuals. And then we also have, in the past 5 or so years, we've had a number of permittees come in that they've retired and gone on to a second career. A gunsmith. We've had a couple of gunsmiths come in. That's been their hobby throughout their entire life. They need something to supplement their retirement income. It's a good solution. Or people that do data processing. Their employer allows them, their larger employer allows them to be home-based, And then that started, and then they realized they could outsource their own skills. And so it's multifaceted why they emerge. And they are growing as a national trend.
Yeah, I guess my question was not why people are working out of their home. That makes sense to me. Why would you get a permit?
Oh, because our regulations require it.
So what's the difference between the conditional and the home business?
The conditional use permit is by our ordinance. Our ordinance is drafted that we allow principal permitted uses. Those are, if you're in the R1 residential district, you can have single family dwellings. We just issue a zoning permit, simple, straightforward. Conditional use permit is the next level. It may be a land use type of activity that would be appropriate in that zoning district, but it has enough potential impacts that there should be a level of review beyond just staff. So those go to the Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment, and the Board of Adjustment ultimately is the decision maker of those, and it establishes a base land use plan for a property. Then a home business permit is when you're associated with a single family dwelling. Some cases, home business permits, though, grow where the use as a home business starts to exceed the use of a single family dwelling. And we see people actually leaving their residences and residing elsewhere and turning that structure into their business then. That's when it would go into a conditional permit.
What about if you put up another building by your house? Now you've expanded. Now you have to put up, you have another building for that business. What happens then?
That's the zoning. Yeah, there's a couple things. One, it depends on the zoning district. We don't allow home businesses and accessory structures in every zoning district. And then if it's in the A1 district, it's permitted in one accessory structure. If you go to a second, we're not going to issue a permit for it if you're using it for your home business. You might be having to do a conditional use permit, or if the entire use has changed so significantly, even rezoning the property.
It goes back to what I, something you only start with one employee, but then it increases, and now you've got five or six. I mean, I drive by one every day, so I know. I just wondered how that would fall in his situation.
And what we do is we place a burden on the applicant to be truthful in their submission. And any time that we think they're not being truthful, we'll enforce, or if we receive complaints.
Couldn't you, you read that? Makes sense. I think I understand now. So maybe what you could do is you could put the septic system disclosure policy to allow home businesses that don't serve the public directly an exemption. Would that make sense? Would that be reasonable? I mean, because I understand the concern, but...
Well, okay, but then let's see. So if you apply that to, a well permit, there's no increase necessarily in wastewater production. I guess my point was that, you're really supposed to have a working septic system, and this is our opportunity to see if you do or don't. The young plumber that comes in, if he's got a record, a permit, and a diagram, he just checks that box and there is no additional expense or worry. But if he doesn't, why doesn't he? Everyone should. It's an enforcement tool is what it is.
Right. That's the point.
Well, it's hard to get an idea on that. The other thing that I forgot to mention today, but it is in here, is the ag exemption. So those folks building, adding on to their house or extra building, and I don't know, can they have a business or home business if they're ag exempt? I don't know. So they'll be exempt. So to answer your question, I anticipate easily a dozen a year, easily, and maybe more. But that, I guess that's what I'm envisioning.
Okay. That's where I was just trying to get a ballpark.
Yeah, not 50, yeah, but okay. Yeah. And it'll be, you know, the numbers go down because that's what we're experiencing with these other ones. Is slowly we're getting everybody fixed.
I understand fully that we're the Board of Health and this is what we're supposed to be doing, but I really struggle with this because, first of all, it's a huge step that we've not taken before. And, you know, if you look at the well construction permit, so my well craps out, I need a new well. So I come in and I need a well permit, and they say, well, you're going to have to show us that you've got a working, up-to-date septic system. And you say, well, no, I know I don't, but I don't have any water. I need to get water for my family. I need to get a well drilled. Well, we're not going to give you a permit.
Oh, we would definitely give a permit, and then a timeline
sure.
for you putting. We're reasonable people.
Sure, I understand that, but I don't know that everybody's going to see it that way. And just speaking for me myself, I have no problem with the zoning permit when somebody comes in and they're going to put an addition on their home. And you know, maybe my thought would be let's start there, let's try that first and see how that goes instead of doing everything all at once. But that's you
how
know
about the ones getting the second septic. What are your thoughts on that?
For a building, put up a machine shed. We're going to put a septic system in. I'm kind of on the fence on that one.
If they put plumbing in it, Paul, they have to have a septic system.
Yeah, I mean that's what I guess I don't see a huge problem with that. If you're going to put in a second septic system, let's make sure that your primary system's up to snuff. But that's just my feelings on it. It's up to this board to do what they want to do. But that's kind of my take on it. This is something that we've not done before, and I don't know how many counties do this. Would we be better off maybe taking a small step first and see how that goes? I mean, you're going to get pushback regardless of
one downfall to this, I think that, like, for those second septic systems going in, I think that they might just go ahead and do it without permitting, and just bypass me altogether. That would be one downside to doing it that way.
I think that's a possibility on any of these.
Yes, it is. It is.
So, I mean, that's something else to consider. I mean, are we going to shoot ourselves in the foot with this policy? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can. It's not that hard to find somebody to put in a septic system, and if they don't want to go through the proper channels, they're just not going to do it.
But on the other hand, if they overburden their existing system because of more people or whatever, now that system's going to fail.
Right.
So this kind of stops that from happening. Sort of.
Well, it's stopping from getting the permit.
Because if the system was already undersized and marginal, and then all of a sudden they have a business there, and it's getting more use, this would kind of catch that and make them bring it up to code, more or less.
Although the ones that are pre-permit time, they're probably just hooked to a drain tile, and they work and work and work.
Well, that's what I mean. You got to catch it. I mean, we got to stop it somehow. This is a way to stop some of that, I guess, if they're an older, resident. Here it is, but.
Trial period is an option.
Yeah.
We could do, I think it'd be beneficial definitely to apply this to zoning permit applications, but also the conditional use permit. Given the list, there is a table of conditional uses in our regulations that if you have a use and you want to go through a process and it's ultimately approved, it has to fall within that table of conditional uses. Just like Margaret mentions, Black's Heritage Farm, the roadhouse use, this is a type of that's a potential type of use that having a policy in place in this. Policy in place in regards to that would be very beneficial. Again, going back to overarching mission of protecting health, safety, and general welfare.
A really good example of that too is the daycare. If they intended to go through with that, we have nothing on file, and that's a 1900 house, and they're using the house septic system.
you know, it could be surfaced.
The house would be in the building across the road.
We don't know. So the nursery would be on the house side, and that they were using the house.
Well, she's actually withdrawn, asked to not have that go to the Planning and Zoning Commission next Monday because they've not yet determined for sure number of children nor the exact location.
Okay. But that's an example. I mean, that was on the board, and then they withdrew. If there was five or more kids, they had to get a certified from Human Services. So that might be kind of catching them up, too. But, I mean, that's an example of why this rule would really work nicely, is to be able to ask them to tell me what their septic system situation is.
Well, for me, I could... I would be able to support the change in policy if we included the zoning permit application, conditional use permit, and multiple septic systems. I would like to see us try those for a certain period of time, and then if we think that we need to expand to home businesses or well construction permits, then we can do that at some time. But that's...
What about conditionally? What about putting it all in there and then doing it conditionally for a time trial period and leave the home business permits in there?
And do the whole thing?
Do the whole thing.
Like, how long would you be talking about? A year? 6 months?
What kind of a trial period, Margaret, would you think?
We're just trying to figure that out. How about June?
Oh, fiscal year?
July to November. Or we could do a half a year through December.
Just let's get a report in December. Like your meetings in December.
Mm-hmm.
If you go July through November.
It would be a December, or July, August, September, October, November. 5 months. That's basically one not quite a construction season because I'm not including spring in that, but... and we talk about June because that's when you all meet next, but we could make it May 1st.
Well, then you wouldn't get any applications between now and May, would you?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, you say start at May 1st.
But not for home business permits, would you? Just for that. I'm talking about just for that section, you wouldn't get many, would you?
Between for the now home and business or for the...
Yeah, between now and May. Is this May?
Well, we don't get a lot in. I mean, how many do you have?
I'm looking at Kristen.
Five a year?
Yeah,
not a lot.
Oh, so why would we want to go a year on this?
Oh, that would be fine. A trial period for a year. They're not talking just home business permits, though. They're talking everything.
Everything.
That's what we're talking about, too.
Okay, 1 year, that would be fine.
Oh, what do you think about that?
I mean, it's all new. I mean, the whole...
Yeah, it is.
It's all new. So, I mean, we at least give it a year, I would think. If I do that, then we might as well not do anything.
and I could report, you know, every 2 months how much pushback we're getting. And if it's awful, then we could maybe scale back a little. The other thing, too, do we need to have, like, a public meeting, not a hearing, because this is policy, but, run some articles in the paper or meeting.
Oh, it's not an ordinance, so you don't have to do any type of a public hearing or
right.
Simply
but an informational meeting. I don't know who our audience would be. You know, maybe septic. I don't know, builders.
I would say it'd be hard to tell who your audience would be. I mean. I don't know if contractors would have that much concern about it, you know. Basically,
it'd be good business for them. They'd be in favor of it, I'd imagine.
Well, it's up to the homeowner. If they want to put an addition on their house, if they want me to put an addition on their house, they're going to have to take care of the other part of it first, you know. Or are they losing business? Somebody says, well, if I got to put in a $10,000 septic system, you know, so much for my $20,000 addition on my house, I'm just not going to do it at all. Yeah.
But maybe that's what we want to happen. I mean, water quality is really an issue in the state of Iowa and the county.
So I guess we need to decide as a board how you want to move forward. If you want to move forward with the way it's presented, or you know, if you want to do the whole thing, if you want to add a trial period to it, if you want to try it for a year or 6 months. I mean,
if we make it a trial period, are we going to enforce it?
Well, that's the other question we have. What do you do? I mean, how many, you told us how many notice of violations did you, I mean, you've always got five or six of them.
Always
right?
Have them sitting out there. A lot of them will comply when they hear an attorney again.
Well, yeah, really.
Send them a certified letter, you get them attention. There's still going to be some that don't, that just will not do it. And we haven't gotten to that point. I know we will. But that'll
that's
be a tough
point. But if we vote this in as a trial period, can we enforce it?
I guess it would depend on how you word the...
Good point.
Enforce this.
I think we just.
Well, I think if it's part of what you do, I mean everything that you do that requires a permit can be enforced. So if I mean it wouldn't be any different than you know somebody building a new house, and not having a septic permit. I mean, when they put the system in, you can enforce that. So if somebody,
well, I guess we would not word it as a trial period. We would put it in for the next 12 months.
Right. Yeah, and that's, I agree, John. I think.
Right.
But then we would be keeping it in our mind that we may.
Right. We review it in 12 months or however.
We'll pass it and review.
So we'll vote this in for 12 months and then review it.
Do it a year from now.
Right.
Yeah.
We would review it.
We want to enforce it because we want to catch, you know, take care of these systems that are bad or going in the tile systems that are undersized. So I move that we adopt it just as it is written here. So I make a motion that we pass it just as it is.
Put an effective date on it? Because you're going to have to bring it to the Board of Supervisors to change the applications, aren't you?
The day of the week is May 1st. Kristen, do you know?
Thursday.
Now in next few weeks, bring the applications forward. Will there be Board of Supervisors meetings the next few Tuesdays? I think.
Or no. There should be. Okay. So do you want to put an effective date on your motion? We can get it done.
May.
I think May 1st. We could have the.
Yeah, we'll make it May 1st then.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to accept the change in policy as presented in the memorandum regarding. Permit applications and septic system disclosures of that. Is it thunder? Okay. We'll do a roll call on this. Passion?
Yes.
Kluge? Dvorak?
Yes.
Speck?
Yes.
Suit? No. And we've passed.
One thing, I'll work with Margaret. This, by having it go into effect May 1st, the next, and I don't know if you've shared with the Board of Health the Our Story newsletter, but Story County Board of Supervisors on a quarterly basis does a newsletter out called Our Story.
Mm.
I'll work with Margaret. This will be a good opportunity. We'll have an April issue that will go out on or before April 28th, and we can incorporate an article in that.
Okay. Good idea.
Okay. Yep.
Make sure that in the article that you really emphasize that the reason that this is being done is because of the concern that everyone has about water quality. That's kind of what is brought up, and that's kind of what pushed me over the edge to kind of permit this or to vote for it. I don't permit anything.
Okay, there's no public hearing items. Any staff comments? Board comments? I would just comment on the first public input session we had last night regarding the proposed e-cigarette ordinance. Yeah. You guys remember we started that process back, I don't know, January, February, and it kind of got derailed, and now the county attorney has rewritten the policy or the ordinance and has taken out any language concerning how the products are to be or can be displayed in a retail setting, and it simply covers the sale of to minors, and the retailer has to have a retail tobacco permit in order to sell them. So we had, I don't know, 15 people here last night or so, and we'll have another one Thursday evening at Ames Council Chambers at 7 o'clock.
How did the people give comments?
Yeah, the one individual owns a store in Ames. He was here. I can't remember. He lives in Pilot Mound, but he owns a store in Ames called Vapon, maybe. Something. It's right on Lincoln Way, I think, next to the cleaners.
Apple John.
Yeah. And that's all he sells, is those. And his only question to us was, why would I be required to have a retail cigarette or tobacco permit? And basically it's because the nicotine that's in, or can be in. I mean, I think you can buy stuff with no nicotine, but you can simply buy the nicotine and add as much as you want.
Yeah, and as strong as you want to get.
Oh, yeah. So that's that. And I think Steve Holmes, you know, gave his 2 cents worth on it. I think we'll probably change some more of the wording, you know, covering the device itself. And I think it's just going to be simply going to be called a stimulated smoking device. You know, because you can buy the cigarette, you can buy the, what do they call them?
Vaporizer?
Hookah. No, yeah, you can buy those. And there's all sorts of, yeah, there's all sorts. Yeah, trust me, I've got 2 college-age kids and all about those. So that's where we're at. So we will have another public input session on, like I said, Thursday evening at Ames City Hall at 7 o'clock. So if you guys feel like you want to come by, come on by. Yeah, I suppose. That's like the first time when you're a kid and you take a big chaw of tobacco. You know, and you get all lightheaded. And
but that was on all kids getting hold of this.
I never tried that.
You can put all sorts of flavors in them. In the, you know, the flavor of the vapor. You know, I mean, that's what the guy's business is, I think, basically.
You know, tobacco is toxic to kids. You know, when they
right.
eat cigarettes and stuff. Like, it used to be the parents would punish their kid and make them eat a pack of cigarettes.
Hey. I guess.
Somewhere like taking a
sofa bar.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, hold it.
Ashley, I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion to second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And adjourn.